You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Thea Matthews. She's talking to me from San Francisco. Thea, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Thea, I know you're not you're temporarily in San Francisco. You said you were born there, but are living in Brooklyn and are back there temporarily. And it's October 1st, 2020 when we're talking. We're still in the pandemic. So before we talk about your book, and I know you're going to read from it, what's happening in San Francisco? You're traveling during the pandemic. How is that? What's going on near you?
Yeah, a lot has happened. I know the city went shut down, and we all went into quarantine back in March. And I'm from San Francisco, so I was already here when that took place. And then I was in the process of applying to MFA programs, and I was accepted to New York University, NYU, to attend their MFA program in creative writing, poetry. And so I actually decided to move to Brooklyn the end of July. And so did that through a pandemic. And then navigating bicoastal love, if you will, I'm visiting San Francisco to visit my partner, my family. And so going back and forth, it is interesting. These are definitely unprecedented times. But for the most part, it's wearing a mask, right? It's a matter of just being very cognizant of what I touch, where I am, and washing my hands, you know? A lot of outdoor clips or restaurant seating has definitely taken place. So, like, the city is changing, the same with New York, right, where things are still slowly being lifted and things are starting to slowly be opened again. It's interesting to navigate this new world, if you will.
Right, right, yeah. So in the bicoastal love sounds like something we could discuss for a while, the challenge in this time and what that means, but let's jump into your book, Unearth of Flowers. Tell me a little bit about that book, and then I know you're going to read from it, and we're going to talk about it, but tell me a little bit about Unearth the Flowers, which there are links to in this interview for people. But yeah, how did that start? Tell me a bit about that.
Unearth the Flowers is my debut poetry collection. I started writing the poems when I was still an undergrad at UC Berkeley. I was a major in sociology. At the time, I joined Poetry for the People program that is now currently led by Aya de Leon. And so I was under the leadership of her and her direction. And a lot of her prompts had to do with self-affirmation and a sense of love as resistance. And so I started to write a few poems just in their very early drafts there. And then I graduated back in 2017. And just stuck with this project. And at first, I was very curious. It was very much organic. I did not walk in with the intention of, I am writing a book. It was more so responding to writing prompts. What does it mean to self-affirm my life, my body, through poetry? And how to utilize poetry as a vessel to break silence, as a vessel to break stigma. And coming from this Black feminist lens, and also studying sociology and social problems, I was working and getting acquainted with survivorship visibility and interviewing survivors and activists and those that have overcome sexual violence in their lives. And as a survivor of myself, writing poetry became this haven where I alchemized the information, alchemize the pain, the memory, and fuse it with flower symbolism and flowers and just this connection with nature seems so effortless to an extent where flowers, you know, they're often seen as these dainty little things, yet they are often the symbols of love, resiliency. They precede humanity, right? And they are the original sources of medicine. And so coming across the flower, and there's quite a many, right? Like unearthed flowers is a taxonomy of memory and flowers and resiliency. Each poem embodies a specific flower, and through that flower, there was memory. There was these vignettes of childhood experiences and familial dynamics I have with like with family members, and it just kind of grew from there. And it's also like taking on this notion too of how like the personal is political, the personal is sacred, the body is sacred. And next thing you know, poem after poem, here we are. We have a book.
Right. It's such a beautiful idea you're saying about flowers, and I'm looking forward to hearing all of this. But I never thought of flowers quite as that kind of symbol before, as the first medicine, as preceding us, as this something very, very special about the symbol of flowers themselves, mm-hmm. right? To ourselves, to humanity. That's such an interesting kind of image and kind of gateway, it seems, into the kind of writing you're doing.
Yeah, definitely. And also too, like flowers and nature in general, they're on their own cycle, right? And so like the flower, there's perennial, there's annuals, there's a cyclical nature of seasons, and how that then parallels with the body, with memory, where and also too, like what does it mean to endure but also transcend trauma, navigating the mind and the body post-trauma. And so a lot of this too maps out the healing journey and the non-linear healing journey of and from violence.
So let's hear from the book. I know you have a few things you're going to read from us. What's the first poem you're reading now?
To select a poem, I think I will do Nepal Cactus. And I can read a couple more. Because some of these are really short.
Okay.
Ready?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. After Nepal Cactus, I'll read Marigold. As above, so below. As within, so without. The principle of correspondence between my prickly body cocooning in the solitude of the desert and the oceanic waves eroding the ridge no one else sees is the metamorphosis of butterflies suspended in the smoke screen, of cerulean mountains in the pale magenta clouds I call sacred, held up by chastity under a sky cursed by relentless sun, burned in the pores of my blossom. I am the Nepal cactus. My grandfather would slice me each morning, trim my thorns, cook me with scrambled eggs, eat me with corn tortillas. I am the prickly pear no one else would touch. I thought life was too hard to bear until my thorns grew back, until I held the chalice, until I drank the water of my mother's womb, until I rose slowly in the heat. Each droplet of prison light streaming down as tears. I am the life, the protective force of transformation. In late spring, I bloom only in mid-morning. By nightfall, I dance where no one can touch me. I am safe.
Thank you for reading that. Let me just ask you about the musicality of that. You read it so beautifully, and it seemed to me such an important part of hearing the poem, which is why I do love hearing poets read their own writing. It seems to have a different, clearly would be different than if I had read it myself. So, is that something you think about in terms of constructing the poem, the musicality of it, the if that's a, even a word, but the music of it, yeah.
Yes, I do, actually. The sonic nature of the poem is just as important as the lyricism and content. Musicality is, I think, definitely something that runs through my veins, for sure, as a poet. I come from the land of spoken word, to an extent, actually, but definitely I've spent years in San Francisco, the Bay Area, attending open mics, reading at literary arts events. And so from young, like baby poet, definitely I found the importance of the poet embodying their work when delivering it, and that their voice matters just as important as the words on the page. And so as I write, I definitely do tend to read aloud, because that will also inform me, am I on the right track or not?
Right, yeah, I like that. So thank you. Let's hear another poem. I'm going to read two more. And you can put it together if there's very short ones, whatever you want to do. But yeah, I'd love to hear you read again.
Okay, great. I'll do a marigold, and then we'll see. We'll do another one. Eyes at the sun stare outside a bus window. A crackhead father dangles cheap rocks in one hand and clenches a disposable lighter, the only fire he feels, in another. Marigold, with torn ruffles, extends her arms, stretches her fingers, emanates sacral rays of a brazen orange and yellow for the lost, resistant spirits who only recognize her in darkness. They see their lantern the timeless fog, cigarette smoke, shots of tequila. Marigold sees her father. His spirit floats, but the orange sun still loves him. Tries to guide his spirit to the light, the crack vanishes, but he refuses to rest by his altar. Marigold now sees her mother, a single mother, wobbling down dirty city streets past forgotten altars, sacrificing last pennies on Catholic uniforms, back and knees sore from carrying groceries, ruptured relationships, a hernia from carrying a stroller up three flights of stairs each day for another fatherless baby. Stubborn blood stands against chimes warbling on wintry, windy nights. She is the wild bull inflamed who does not bleed. Her weight marks her endurance, a path she cleaved. Her fat and hair mark her protection. When she fights to kill. She is the one alive who reminds Marigold everything can be healed. Angel's trumpet.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
That's very beautiful. And what a lovely last line, too, which seems to point towards what you were initially talking about in terms of the ideas of this book, which is that, you know, which is such a big statement that everything can be healed, right? That seems like such a kind of lovely parallel to nature itself. We know this is largely the case in nature, and that's a nice parallel to make. That seems that it runs throughout the book, does it?
Yes, yes. Everything can be healed, from land to the body, to memory. Is it hard? Of course. Is it, you know, it won't be easy. I think it can be simple, but I do believe, just from personal experience and from just personal belief, that everything can be healed. And so that's why so much of this text is a triumph over trauma piece. A marker of resiliency is a reminder of one's own power, reclaiming their self, their body, and that it is possible to overcome. It is possible to live, transcend, and thrive. And so, yeah, I have a few poems. I can keep reading a little bit more. What would you like?
Yeah, let's hear some more. I'd love to hear a few more.
Okay. Angel's trumpet. And I am here, dangling from screams buried in dirt. This family, this country, wears hypocrisy like a hagfish or lamprey found in Saks Fifth Avenue fur. Parasite appears rich from scraps of skin and hair, twirls and blood of children's fingers, stitched line by line, they will one day die a premature death. Artificial light and intelligence cannot conceal core cavities found in the body, found in dead tree trunks, found in unraveling roots, conduct policies, corporations, this nation's constitution. Law is nothing but a series of loopholes, a game of chess, warrior polo sweater. Women condones torture, genocide, rape, the telling of we were never equal. I am the angel's trumpet. You touch me long enough, chew on my petals, swallow me whole, and I kill you. Step back and to the voices near street corners, backyards, front lawns, rows of houses, mom-and-pop shops, apartment complexes. Where there is land, there is blood. And I play you the dead, deprived, devalued, left to lie in pools of blood, and their blood seeps into my soil. From bodies killed, stolen, I transmute the shock to love.
Thank you so much.
That's a
beautiful and such a powerful poem. You know, that feels like, I don't know why I had this image, the kind of poem that if it was read at a poetry slam at the Neo-Rican Cafe in New York, people would be going crazy, you know, the power of it. You know, that's it's enormously powerful, and the way you're reading it feels like, you know, more than any of the others, like, I don't know, an activist stance. That's a kind of call to rise or something, you know?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I have read the new Eureka Cafe. I love that place. And yes.
That's great to hear. I love that place too. How did they react? If you read that one, how did they react to that poem?
Did I read Angel's Trumpet? I don't think I read that specific poem, but I have read poems there, and definitely with the affirmation, right? Like, there is an activist stance and the I of this work. And I put I in quotations, right? Because there's this genre of poetry, confessionalism, where the I is the muse, the I is divulging these secrets and sensory disturbances of the mind, right? And here, so much of the I has been disturbed, right? But it's also like, enough is enough. Here I take a stance. Here I affirm my body. Here I affirm what I see that I have been called to rise. So definitely this book stands on the, you know, or I should say, I shouldn't say stands on the back, but like, it's lifted by the legacy of poets like June Jordan, the work of Maya Angelou, Audre Lorde, and Tazaki Shange. Like, their spirit definitely lives and unearths the flowers.
Yeah, that's so exciting to hear, and great to hear that you've been to that cafe and like it, because I haven't been to many poetry slams. It's really the only cafe that I know well that way, and there's a kind of ethic or spirit around poetry there that's incredibly exciting and also powerful, that what you just said and the references you just made sort of typifies. But I don't know, what is it like in San Francisco? Are there places that are anything like the Neo-Rica Cafe?
Oh, pre-COVID, yes, right? I think we're definitely all undergoing a radical shift right now to maintain connection, maintain access to share each other's work and to bear witness to each other, right? pre-COVID, there were definitely literary art spaces. You know, the Poet Laureate ran two open mics, Poem Jam, and another at this bookstore in the Mission, Adobe Books. There's Sacred Grounds Cafe. There's curators of the Berkeley Poetry Festival. That was another means of just having writers be highlighted and deliver their work. In the East Bay, there's the Roots Slam. I think in terms of like kind of what would be a strong comparison to your Weekend Cafe, the Roots Slam. There's quite a few, honestly.
Well, that's good to hear, then. That's good to hear. And thanks for sharing all this today with me. Before I ask you the last question about what you're reading, is there anything else you want to say about this book or anything else? There'll be links so people can buy it here and learn more. But is there anything that you want to say that you wished I had asked or anything at all?
One thing to say about Unearth the Flowers is how each poem interweaves the aesthetics as well as symbolisms of flowers into memory, right? Interweaves with memory. And I think, like, what am I trying to say? What comes to mind that really taps into the power and resilience of this book is how much it invokes. So much of the work serves as a love letter, right? As to the family, to country, to self. And it's also a self-incantation to bring the power within out, right? To have the power within be the fuel to keep going. So in many ways, these poems serve as prayers, but they in turn amplify the power self-affirmation.
I'm so glad you added that on, and thank you for that. And I want to ask you what you're reading at the moment.
Yes, I'm reading a lot. I mean, as an MFA grad, MFA poetry candidate, you know, I'm reading like a few books a week. But I know Claudia Rankin just came out with her latest book, Us, and that has been really good to read and to see where she has really taken on the next tier of incorporating race theory and the political racial dynamics of this country into her work in somewhat more of a memoir fashion. I recently was rereading some of Terrence Hayes' work, Lighthead, like won the National Book Award, and for Robin Cost Lewis. I was reading some of her work recently. There's quite a few poets, like contemporary poets, that I am just deeply, deeply moved by. And, you know, it's, I think it may be too early to say, to see them in my work, but I'm definitely paying close attention to and watching and reading more of, like, the work of Jericho Brown, Joy Priest, I would say Natalie Diaz, Claudia Rankin.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Thea. And I wish you well in, you know, in writing and in your upcoming master's program. And thank you so much for talking with me today. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.